working out what he was, what he could do for her, their minds in perfect harmony with one another. There were so many things he could have said to her in that moment, but he never had the chance. She wouldn't let him. Instead, she held a solitary finger to her thin pink lips, hushing him softly, and he obeyed without question. He watched as she rose from the ground to her full height, holding a hand down towards him, just as he had to her mere minutes before. "Dance with me," she sighed, and there was no hesitation. Almost instantly, Abraham found himself beside his newfound damsel, his arms wrapped tight around her, oblivious to the thick pulsating mist now rolling in around them. Clouds started forming in the doctor's mind as the mist grew heavier and heavier, blotting out his vision. When he eventually managed to snap himself out of the trance, he found himself back in the tavern, alone with Charity. "They gone, then?" he asked cheerily, catching her off guard. "Don't worry," she said, sitting herself down beside the doctor. "I'm sure if I called, one of them would be here within an instant. Now then, now they're gone, I want you to tell me everything." Suddenly, the doctor looked alarmed. "Everything?" he asked. "Are you sure? Because I know a lot of everything. Everywhere. Every when, every how. And I've got to warn you, that's a fair bit of everything. Might take a while to get through." "Well, I say a while. I could probably cram it down into a millennia or two. Well, I say a millennia. Could make it just a couple of centuries for the abridged version. Or 3.5 days for the entire history of Earth. The human race just isn't that interesting. Sorry." He shook his head apologetically, but Charity didn't react. The doctor could tell she was distracted. Every few seconds he'd catch her looking over her shoulder, back towards the door. "What is it?" he asked, dragging her back to reality. "Why is everyone here so on edge?" Charity hesitated, and the doctor could tell she didn't trust him. Not completely. "Surely you can understand why everyone's suspicious of you," she said at last. "Absolutely," the doctor agreed. "I'm probably the most suspicious man you'll ever meet. But you can trust me. I promise. Now tell me, what's been happening here? What have you got to be suspicious about?" "Strangers," Charity answered simply. "We were cut off about 3 weeks ago now. No one's been able to enter or leave the village, and we don't know why. We're running out of food, the harvest season's long gone, our supplies are running low, and something's getting to the livestock before we can."
"You mean they're going missing?"
Charity shook her head. "Mr. Raj and Mr. Haycott keep finding their cattle dead in the fields, torn apart, like an animal attack, only worse." The doctor's curiosity was piqued. "And there's more," Charity continued. "People have been going missing. Will-o'-the-wisps, strange lights in the sky, leading men up to the moors, luring them to their deaths. Sometimes we've even found bodies, attacked just like the cattle." Charity swallowed hard. "Some of the women have been disappearing too," she added.
"But you don't think they're dead?"
"We've never found their bodies. Only the men. That's why everyone keeps insisting I have to lock myself away. I mean, young women going missing. People are always going to assume the worst, aren't they? That's why they thought you were the demon. You're the only man they've ever found alive out there."
"Right," the doctor agreed. "Makes sense, I suppose. Completely wrong, of course, but kind of logical in its own little way." He smiled his most reassuring smile.
"What were they doing up on the moors with a demon on the loose anyway?"
"Hunting it."
"Oh." Ideas had already started forming in the doctor's mind as he locked the information into place, trying his best to narrow down the possibilities. There were far too many potential explanations. Not all of them alien. But it was a start, at least.
"And what about this darkness of yours?" the doctor asked, catching her off guard again.
"Because when I first arrived here, I went to look up at the sky, and do you know what I saw?"
Charity shook her head.
"Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Not even the gaps between the clouds. No stars, no moon,
just darkness. And I thought, that can't be normal, surely. Nowhere in the universe has a sky like that. So what happened?
You're the doctor, Charity replied. You tell me. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. That's how it's always been, since God created man. We know that. Everyone knows that. Then one day, no one knows why, it simply failed to rise. And this village has been consumed by darkness ever since.
But that's impossible, protested the doctor. The sun doesn't just go away and stop working. Not this one, anyway. He bounded across the room to an open window and looked outside.
So where's it got to?
Now you're asking me to explain all this, just like they do, Charity said. She walked across the room to join him at the window, stretching out an arm, pointing off into the distance, just beyond their vision.
Some people say you can still see it, if you look hard enough, she said. Just the faintest glow on the horizon. Blink and you'll miss it. Can you see?
Nope, the doctor told her.
No, she said glumly. Neither can I. Some people tried to follow, those that could see it. But the further they walked, the darker the night became. Until eventually they found themselves returned to the other side of the village, back where they began.
Recursive occlusion, suggested the doctor under his breath. No, it couldn't be.
Could it?
No.
Some say the sun is dead now, Charity sighed. But this is all part of the devil's grand design. And to think they call this the Age of Enlightenment. They only say that because they don't all believe the same thing anymore.
And is that a bad thing? The doctor asked.
Not if you still have something to believe in.
The doctor smiled.
And what do you believe? For a second, Charity hesitated. Then she looked back towards the sky, trying to spot the stars. It sounds silly, she said.
Oh, go on, you can tell me, the doctor beamed. I promise I won't laugh.
Still, a brief pause hung in the air between them.
I used to think there were fairies at the bottom of my garden, she said eventually, still gazing out the window.
I suppose I still do in some ways. It reassures me to think that there might be more to life than just the things we see. There could be a whole different world out there, hidden amongst our own. Some things that can never be explained.
Then Charity fell silent, considering what the doctor had told her.
What you said before, nowhere in the universe. What did you mean by that?
Doctor shifted awkwardly beside her, and she turned to face him, tried to look him in the eye.
You're not a demon, are you?
She murmured, more an observation than a question. The doctor sighed heavily.
Sometimes, Charity, I can't help but wonder.
Unbeknownst to the doctor, however, Abraham Godchild was dancing with a true demon just outside the village. The pair of them, captured in the moonlight, heavy raindrops drizzling down their faces. It seemed to Abraham as though he'd spent hours in her company, worshipping this creature, relishing her touch, without once ever catching her name. They clung to one another as the elements lashed around them, thunder cracking, gales howling, his thin boyish fingers playing lightly across her bodice. Then he heard her, as they circled one another, whispering strange words into his mind, words without meaning. He could feel her thoughts in his, and his in hers, both oblivious to the storm that brewed around them. Their minds and bodies so close together now, almost one and the same. He felt oddly comfortable, suddenly at ease.
He'd danced like this at court balls, often mingling with 100 different women in an evening, the flurry of satin and lace, bodices rising and falling gently with the swelling of the music, figures spinning lightly on the balls of their feet, dancing magnificently with a multitude of partners. But there was only ever one woman capable of catching his eye across a crowded ballroom. The elusive Miss Emily Wainwright, daughter of Lord Alexander Wainwright, and the target of a great many men's affections besides. He could see her now, as though she was there, dancing that very dance with him on the moors. A bleak setting for a most beautiful act. But the creature could also see her,
even encouraged him to think that she was Emily as she whispered yet more alien words into his head, addling his senses, warping his reality so he might believe what she needed him to. But Abraham Godchild had always been the most steadfast gentleman. It was his reputation. He put manners and class above his own personal happiness. And yet, with Emily, he could happily throw caution to the wind just to spend another vital second in her company. Just to hand her another glass of wine, to bid her good night. Maybe even one day to tell her how he really felt about her. They danced their noble minuet together in that everlasting night. He'd been sent there on a mission to investigate its cause. And yet for all he cared in that moment, that night could last forever. The sun need never rise. A new day need never dawn. And it wouldn't. Not for him. Not now. He looked into the woman's face again. Into those warm, hazel eyes. No trace of sapphire now. And that gentle smile. The one only Emily knew how to throw. It was her. He could have sworn it. And yet the angel on the moors continued to toy with him, playing with his feelings. It encapsulated the very essence of Emily Wainwright, a cruel parody of the woman he knew, encouraging him to surrender, to let his guard down, just for a second. And when he did... Abraham thought of Emily as he felt the creature's fangs sink deep into his throat, screaming out her name with his dying breath. He didn't know why, whether it was a plea that she might stop, an accusation, perhaps even a final declaration of his love. He felt his legs give way, head sat heavy on his shoulders, his entire body crumpling to the ground beneath his feet, a warm sensation suddenly flowing from his throat, spilling onto the earth beneath him. As he fell, he rolled over onto his back. He could see her standing over him through a watery haze, his eyes now drowning with tears. And he could see there was no pity or remorse, no chance that she might save him. But it comforted him to think she might be there. Then she spoke, just a few simple words, told him that she loved him. Her voice not quite the same as he remembered, but for the briefest moment, just before he died, Abraham Godchild could pretend that it was her, that his beloved Emily had come to hold his hand, to help him on that final, lonely journey. And before he realized the truth, before the figment of Emily could abandon him completely, everything went black. A young lad went missing almost a month ago now. No one knows how or why. Harry Winter, his name was. Charity and the doctor were now sitting cross-legged on the tavern floor, facing one another. Both had a cup of water in their hands, liberated from behind the counter. He was the first of many, Charity told the doctor. But he was a good lad, Harry. Worked hard to look after his father. She paused, remembering how Mr. Winter had seemed in the weeks following Harry's initial disappearance. He's not been the same since. Though I suppose that's to be expected. What was he working on at the time? Asked the doctor. I'm not sure, Charity confessed. There was some kind of building work being carried out at one of the local barns. Harry had been sent out to gather supplies, the usual sort of thing. She leaned towards the doctor conspiratorially. Some say he disturbed an unmarked grave. The doctor leaned even closer towards Charity. What sort of grave? He whispered. Oh, nothing important, Charity answered casually, leaning back and taking a much-needed gulp of water from her cup. It was just a local landmark. Lucifer's tombstone, it's called. Some sort of superstitious symbol tied up with village history. The doctor looked at her. I'm serious, she insisted. I've seen it as you enter the village. It was just a mound of rocks covered in moss. It's been there for years. No one knew why, so they said it was some kind of grave. I mean, people always invent stories like that to explain the inexplicable, don't they? Don't they just, the doctor muttered, leaping to his feet. He offered his hand to Charity and helped her up. Do you think it's important? She asked. That depends, he said. What can you tell me about it? Not much, she answered, and she watched the doctor's face visibly drop with disappointment. I'm afraid I don't know much about that sort of thing. Sorry. Then let's find someone who does.
The doctor bounded across to the door on the other side of the room. "You're not going to find anyone out there," Charity insisted as he wrapped the palm of his hand tightly round the handle. "They're all terrified."
"You think?" The doctor twisted the handle, a huge grin spreading across his face as he opened the door. A massive crowd of villagers had gathered just outside, and had undoubtedly been stood there for a while, judging by how damp they all were. Many of them were soaked through. The doctor held a hand flat into the night. The storm was easing off. Safe to step outside and brave the elements.
"You've done this before, haven't you?" Charity said. The doctor winked at her and offered her his arm.
"Oh, yes," he cheered. "The best thing is, they've probably been listening at the door, hanging on our every word, which saves me an awful lot of time. I can't bear repeating myself."
A throng of men eyed them both warily as they stepped outside, when a younger man suddenly burst through the crowd, running towards the doctor and his companion. He had scruffy black hair, blue eyes, and the kind of tall, broad silhouette that suggested he was some kind of labourer. Without warning, the doctor felt Charity rip her arm from his and watched as she ran to greet the stranger. Where they met, the pair fell into an instant affectionate embrace, the stranger clinging on to Charity with his life. As the pair pulled away from their impromptu clinch, they shared the briefest of kisses, before the newcomer took Charity gently to one side.
"I heard what happened," the young man blurted out anxiously. "They said you'd been seized by some sort of demon, that he'd trapped you in there with him."
The doctor coughed loudly, intruding on their private conversation. "Yes, sorry, demon," he announced.
"That'd be me. And you are?"
At first, the newcomer refused to answer. "Sorry," Charity replied on his behalf, dragging the young man back towards the doctor. "Doctor, this is my husband, Nate. Nate, this is the doctor." Both men held their hands out grudgingly to one another, entering into a polite, yet decidedly reluctant handshake.
"It's Nathaniel, actually," Nate told the doctor through gritted teeth. "Nice to meet you."
"And you," replied the doctor.
"Who knows, you might even be able to help, because this darkness of yours, I'm looking for someone to help me shed some light on it, so to speak." He turned to the crowd. "Anyone?" But there was no reply. Instead, the villagers mumbled nervously amongst themselves, refusing to answer. "Oh, come on," the doctor bellowed. "There must be something, some tiny little detail tucked away in one of your local legends. Anything?"
"Well, it has been said that the darkness came here once before," a voice piped up. "Before this village even existed."
The crowd watched as an old white-haired man made his way slowly to the front of the congregation. Not one of the men from the altercation in the tavern.
"They say the land went 70 days without sunlight," he continued. "Only the sisterhood could banish the darkness from this place. And when they did, they founded the abbey in memory of their triumph, of their victory over the demons and their everlasting night."
"Was there ever any mention of how they overcame the darkness?" the doctor asked. "Or where it came from?" Charity added.
"No," the old man told them, shaking his head. "We never once thought it could be true, not in our wildest dreams. And now we've lost both the sisters and their secret, along with any chance we might have had of ending this."
There was a momentary pause as they waited for the doctor to respond, but he was already distracted, his head tilted to one side, down towards the ground.
"Can you hear that?"
he asked Charity. She shook her head and looked around intently as though that might somehow allow her to see what only he could hear. "What am I listening for?" she asked. But the doctor didn't answer. Instead, he simply held up his hand, silencing the crowd around him, and waited for the noise to grow steadily louder, drawing closer and closer towards them. Suddenly, one of the village watchmen ran into the square, lantern flailing in his hand, as he breathlessly tried to alert the villagers to what was coming. But they already knew. They could hear it for themselves, a gentle, steady thudding in the darkness. Charity watched as realization dawned upon the crowd, as they murmured anxiously with one another, hearing the impossible approach, another stranger, the second that night. Then they recognized the noise as it drew nearer. It was the sound of hooves, a horse galloping through the heavy gloom towards them, following the light of the village like a beacon, growing steadily closer and closer. Then they saw it. Glimpses snatched in firelight,
a fine black steed sweeping majestically from the shadows as it burst into the square, almost knocking one of the watchmen off his feet. At first glance, it didn't seem to have a passenger of any kind. But then, as it slowed, Charity noticed a shape strapped across the elaborate leather saddle, arms and legs bound together beneath its midsection, foppish hair falling across an unfamiliar face. The horse spluttered to a clumsy halt at Nate's feet, and almost immediately the doctor was at its side, releasing the dead man's body from its back, resting it gently on the ground. A mark of respect. Officials tried to prevent him rifling through the dead man's pockets, and Charity tried to stop them interfering. "Let him," she insisted. But they didn't. Not at first. "Listen to her," Nate warned them, as calmly as he could. "And if you won't listen to a woman, then listen to me. This man here is a doctor, a man of learning. And if Charity thinks he should examine this man, well, I don't see that any of us have much choice but to let him." An affronted hush spread quickly amongst the crowd, and Charity knew Nate had probably overstepped at the mark. But then she didn't particularly care anymore. Too many inexplicable things had happened over the last few weeks. Perhaps their only solution lay with this equally inexplicable man. Charity shot her husband a tender little smile, then turned her attention back towards the doctor. By this point, he'd already managed to remove the dead man's jacket, and was now in the process of enthusiastically turning each and every pocket inside out. A handful of gold and silver coins fell idly to the ground as the doctor threw the jacket to one side, frisking the body for any further clues. Anything that might provide a lead. "What are you looking for?" Charity asked, crouching down beside him. "I don't know," the doctor admitted. "Won't until I find it." "Hold on. Here we go. What's this?" He broke off. Then, almost as though he'd called upon some magic words to help him, the doctor withdrew a letter from the young man's breeches, holding it up for all to see. Even from a distance, it was clear the ornate wax seal that had once secured the letter was broken. Fragments of wax still clung stubbornly to the fringes of the parchment. On the reverse were two words. "Abraham Godchild," the doctor announced to the villagers. Finally, their body had a name. He turned his back on them again as he ripped the letter open, studying its contents. He read of the mission and of the news that had reached the outside world of Thornton Rising. And Charity guessed at once why a man like Godchild had been chosen. Never one to give up, Abraham had succeeded in his task. He'd found a way through the darkness, infiltrating the very heart of the village itself. But it had cost him his life. "What killed him?" Charity finally asked, breaking the awful silence that had now hung across the village.
"Looks like some kind of animal attack to me," Nate suggested. "We used to see things like that all the time up on the moors. Usually just wolves attacking livestock." "Not in this case, I'm afraid," the doctor told them, shaking his head. "See those?" He indicated a pair of tiny punctures on the dead man's throat, running his fingers lightly across the wounds. "Far too delicate and precise for any animal. No, this is something altogether different. Something intelligent."
The doctor's hand drifted down Godchild's body, pointing to a speck of crimson creeping out from beneath the dead man's waistcoat. He tugged roughly at the buttons, opening it to reveal a strange dark pattern staining the shirt, soaking through the ruffs of crisp white linen. It was blood. The doctor quickly set about loosening the dead man's collar, ignoring the protestations of the crowd, and hauled the shirt up slowly from Godchild's chest, throwing it aside. The body fell limply to the ground beneath their feet. An expression of quiet panic spread across the doctor's face, and when Charity followed his gaze, she saw the simplest of messages. A series of dark red lines smeared across Abraham's chest, inked crudely in the dead man's blood. 6 letters. 3 words. "I am now." A frown of confusion flickered across Charity's forehead. "I am now," she repeated quietly to herself, as though the message was somehow incomplete. She shuffled across to where the doctor sat. "I am now." "What?" she asked again. "That doesn't make sense."
"Oh, I think it does," the doctor sighed. "Whatever this force is, it means what it says. It's now. It exists. It's here, all around us." He stood up sharply, spinning on his heels, surveying the village that surrounded them.
His eyes widened almost instantly, the hairs on the back of his neck standing on end. "Do any of you feel that?" he asked abruptly, licking the tips of his fingers. "That sort of tingle in the air." But no one answered. They were all too afraid now to admit to feeling anything, just in case it spurred the doctor on. Instead, one of the watchmen strode to face him, harbouring a question of his own.
"You speak of a force," the man said boldly, trying hard to swallow the fear in his voice. "What do you mean by that? What manner of horror would do this to a man?"
"I don't know. Not yet," the doctor answered simply, running his hands backwards through his hair, his mind apparently racing at a million miles an hour. "It's almost as if it's waiting for something," he suggested. "But what?" "What makes you think it's waiting?" Charity asked.
"This wasn't just a warning," the doctor told her grimly. "Just look at that face. See how pale it is."
Charity looked at the young man's skin. His face was as white as his eyes.
"It's like all the life's been drained from him."
"All the blood," confirmed the doctor gravely.
"And that's not the sort of thing you do, just to scare a few people.
Though obviously it's pretty effective at that as well.
No, something like this is born out of necessity. A basic desire to survive, to feed." Charity suddenly felt a horrible sickness in her stomach.
"You mean something out there ate this man?" she asked.
"No, not ate," the doctor said. "Just, feasted."
Again, the crowd grew anxious, throwing 100 different questions at the doctor. He ignored almost all of them.
"There is not a beast on God's earth that could feast upon a man in such a manner," protested one of the watchmen.
"Exactly," replied the doctor, rallying the crowd. "And that's what we're up against. Something not of this world. A creature from the stars, here to feed on the blood of you and your cattle." He turned to Charity. "Do you believe me?"
Charity could feel the words forming on the tip of her tongue, but she had no time to answer. Suddenly, the doctor felt a strange sensation overwhelm him, just as it had before, and he couldn't move. He was in the creature's mind again, reliving its memories, experiencing its emotions. Everything it felt back then, he would feel now, as if it was happening to him. Horrible feelings. It was dark and cold. He could taste earth in his mouth, feel it all around him as he fought to breathe, coughing up lungfuls of air, resisting the urge to choke. And there was panic too. A terrible sense of dread, of being trapped in one place alone for the rest of time. His mind now swelling inside the creature's, his head throbbing, aching with pain. Finally, a voice broke through, calm and reassuring.
"Doctor?" Charity asked. "Doctor, are you all right?"
She placed a hand gently on his shoulder, and the doctor's eyes flicked open, blinking suddenly, wide and alert.
Blood pumped wildly through his heart as he struggled to connect all the different elements together in his head.
Then suddenly, out of nowhere, it came to him.
"Of course," he snapped. "It all makes sense."
Charity looked at him, confused.
"What does?"
"Everything," he replied. "All those stories you told me about the darkness and the sisterhood and the demons. What if they were all true? Every single word." He was rambling like a madman now. "Because it all fits, don't you see? All those creatures that feast on the blood of the living, they draw upon the minerals it contains. Minerals like iron, just like you humans do."
"What do you mean, just like us?" Charity asked as he paused for breath.
"Well," the doctor continued, "you can only ever have so much of a good thing. Minerals like iron are all well and good, but too much and you risk an overdose. At best, it might just weaken your central nervous system, muck about with your heart and brain a bit. And at worst..."
"It kills you?" Charity suggested.
The doctor nodded grimly. "But this place," he exclaimed, gesturing loudly into the darkness that surrounded them. "Good old Yorkshire! This place is full of iron. Well, for now, until you mine it all at least."
"You bury a creature like that here, you might just overwhelm it. Hold it at bay for a bit. At least until some unsuspecting passerby unleashes it again a few centuries later."
"Yes, that's it." The doctor smiled, cheering his own theories with a childlike sense of pride. But only Charity seemed to understand him, and even her mind took a second or two to catch up. So this creature, she started, that's what the sisterhood buried here before, isn't it? They banished it back into the landscape, trapping it there. Am I right?
Precisely, the doctor agreed. And now it's woken up, or rather she has been woken up. Probably by that winter lad of yours, sorry. And I'm betting she's not the happiest of bunnies either. So let's think about this. She's just woke up, so she'll be out for revenge, dominion over the living, that kind of thing. But we can stop her, I promise.
Hold on, Nate interrupted. What do you mean, she?
Oh, didn't I mention? The doctor grinned. I think I bumped into your demon up on the moors when I arrived. Can't have been her type, I don't think. Hence my still being here.
Doctor, you're not making sense, Charity protested. Are you saying you've already met this creature?
Kind of, the doctor said. I think. I just get flashes every so often, like some kind of presence tucked away at the back of my mind, which would explain the amnesia. I hope. Still don't get this darkness, though. I'll have to work on that.
Anyway, that's enough of the hypotheticals. He turned to Charity. You ready, then?
Ready for what? She asked. The doctor took her hand and grinned his most childlike grin.
Me!
It took them both a good 10 minutes to reach the village abbey, but it was dark, and Charity wasn't entirely convinced the doctor knew where they were going, or why. For a short time, she even thought that they might be destined to spend the rest of their lives together, running up and down little country lanes in the middle of the night. But it wasn't to be. They'd reached their destination, in the end. Charity shivered as they stepped into the abbey grounds. She'd never really ventured this far outside the village before. Not after dark, anyway. Suddenly, every strange noise unsettled her. Twigs snapping under their feet, owls hooting in the treetops, and a number of other noises she couldn't even begin to explain. How could her own home seem so unfamiliar all of a sudden? So alien. Even the reassuring presence of the abbey now cast a forbidding shadow through the gloom. Here we are, then, she announced, trudging through the grounds. But the doctor had already bounded a few steps ahead of her, seemingly dismissing the pair of large oak doors at the front of the building, searching instead for an alternative point of entry. As they circled the grounds, Charity noticed a series of massive shuttered windows set deep into each wall, their glass shimmering with a strange, unnatural light. Then when they reached the rear of the building, the doctor fell strangely silent, and Charity knew at once what he was thinking. She'd thought it herself many times before. The whole structure of the abbey was somehow strange, unusual, like it was out of kilter with the rest of the village. The two towers on the eastern and western corners were of decidedly different heights from one another, and the windows too varied in shape and size across the building's outer walls. Not necessarily unpleasant, just odd. It's always looked that way, she told him. No one knows why. It just has. It's famous for it. The doctor took a step back, casting his eyes over a wider section of the building.
But it can't have been designed that way, surely, he insisted. It's not symmetrical. If I was in charge of designing a building like that, I'd have to make it symmetrical. Wouldn't you?
But no, that... He gestured to the abbey, sweeping his hand across the length of the wall ahead of him. That looks like it's been built on top of another building to me. He paused, as though considering the notion for a moment.
Then he started storming round the grounds again. I wonder what was here first.
No one knows, Charity said, trying her best to keep up with him. The sisterhood founded this place just before they left. Only a few friars remain here now. She paused. Maybe they know something about it. They could help us.
I don't think so, answered the doctor, slowing his pace as they approached a door to the side of the building. If that demon of yours has a history with them, chances are they're all connected somehow.
Trust me, someone's probably holding a black mass in that creature's honour even as we speak. Well, I say probably, I mean maybe, possibly, perhaps.
Charity heard a gentle whine coming from what seemed to be the doctor's hand, then a loud, clumsy clunk as the door unbolted itself on the other side. Have you finished? She asked impatiently.
Not quite, replied the doctor, opening the door. After you.
Charity could hear their own footsteps echoing ahead of them as they stepped into the chamber. Even in the darkness, she somehow found herself overwhelmed by their surroundings. She could just about make out a series of tall pillars lining the aisles, a semicircular apse projecting awkwardly from the south end of the building.
Then above them a series of vast wooden beams arched across the roof like ribs. She shivered. Somehow this building was able to inspire a strange sense of dread in her, the like of which she'd never felt before. Instinctively, she decided to keep moving, joining the doctor next to one of the staircases at the far end of the chamber. "Won't be a jiffy," he told her as he pulled the sonic screwdriver from his pocket, aiming it up the staircase ahead of them. Charity watched as the thin metal tube extended from its base, the tip glowing blue with a gentle whine, lighting their way. Reluctantly, she'd grabbed hold of his hand to let him lead her up the staircase, one step at a time. It was either that or wait for him downstairs. In the darkness. Alone. Somehow the staircase had seemed safer. As they made their way slowly up the tower, Charity thought she could hear the walls humming quietly around them, as though the entire building was somehow trying to communicate with them, to tell them what had happened when the darkness struck. But she knew it wasn't. She knew it was somehow the doctor's doing. "What is that thing?" she asked, pointing at the sonic screwdriver in his hand. "Some kind of lantern?" The doctor turned to her and nodded. "If you like." "A lantern you keep in your pockets?" Charity mused. "A lantern that makes the stonework of this building scream somehow?" The doctor sighed. "Yep, afraid so." "Oh. The funny thing is, that's not the stonework you're hearing," the doctor told her. "Well, I mean, you will be on some level, faint vibrations and all that, but nothing you should be able to make out. Not clearly. Not unless you have very good hearing. Which I don't know, maybe you have. But no, that..." He patted his hand across the wall beside them. "That is the sound of something else entirely. Some kind of xenotech. Alien technology threaded throughout the building. But what for? And why here of all places?" Charity shrugged, and the doctor tapped his knuckles against the stonework, as though trying to will some kind of answer out of them. "Perhaps it's..." But the doctor's voice was suddenly, unceremoniously cut off by a cacophony of noise echoing throughout the tower, bells tolling loudly from the chamber above their heads. "Brilliant," the doctor muttered under his breath. "That's all we need," he shouted back to Charity. "It'll be choir practice next, always the way." But Charity didn't answer. Instead, it seemed as though she'd been frozen to the spot, too afraid to move. The doctor crouched down beside her, a few steps ahead, and looked into her eyes. "What is it?" he asked. "What's wrong?" "It's those bells," Charity started, trying hard to hide the fear in her voice. "They stopped ringing when the darkness came, when we lost all track of time." "So?" the doctor asked. "So why are they ringing now? And more to the point, who's ringing them?" The doctor looked up towards the source of the noise above them. "Only one way to find out," he smiled, and he hauled her up the staircase after him. The noise grew steadily stronger as they approached the bell chamber, until eventually neither the doctor nor Charity could hear one another speak. Then just as they reached the top of the tower, the noise stopped. Dead. Just the faintest tinny buzzing now ringing in their ears. For a moment, Charity wondered if all the noise could have deafened her senses, if that had been the last thing she'd been destined ever to hear. Then she heard the whine of the doctor's lantern next to her, and she knew that the bells had stopped. For the time being, at least. She could hear herself breathing again, ragged and afraid, putting on a brave face for the doctor's benefit. She could hear the blood pumping through her ears, her heart racing, and watched in awe as his pocket lantern seemed to unlock the door ahead of them. The doctor winked at her, then pressed a finger to his lips, silencing her before she even had the slightest chance to ask how he'd managed to do whatever it was he'd done. Then he wrapped his fingers lightly round the handle, twisting it until the door groaned slowly inwards, and they stepped inside. Moonlight burst through the windows now, swamping the chamber in a series of deep, dark shadows. Charity resisted the urge to gag as she followed the doctor inside, rotting floorboards creaking beneath her feet. A vile stench hung in the air, new to her senses, but one the doctor would have recognised in a heartbeat. It was death, the unmistakable decay of human flesh. "Can you see anything?" Charity hissed across the room, trying desperately to avoid any additional intakes of breath. The doctor nodded grimly. "Yes," he answered quietly. "I see them." Charity crossed the room towards him, a handkerchief now held tightly to her face as she followed the doctor's gaze.
There, slumped against the massive bells, were the bodies of two dead monks, one young, one old, the hoods of their cowls pulled back to reveal their faces, both of them contorted in horror. They'd been dead at least a week, the doctor guessed. As they approached, Charity could see the men had been fastened to the ropes through a series of complex straps and pulleys. Somebody's idea of a joke, the doctor told her as he went to examine the bodies. Not that it was the least bit funny. But what's it all for? And what was all that ringing in aid of? Charity asked again. Was it them? I mean, it couldn't have been them. Could it? Then, as if to answer, one of the monks suddenly shifted and moaned, a low guttural groan escaping from his lips.
It was for us a warning, the monk spluttered, his lips unused to speaking. But for them, a call to war.
The doctor and Charity watched, in morbid fascination, as the two monks now began to ring their bells one final time, gesturing feebly out towards an open window.
Behold,
they declared in unison, their bodies slumping back against the massive bells ahead of them.
She comes.
What is it? The doctor asked. What's coming? What does she want with you? Tell me! But the monks didn't answer. He could see it in their milky, lifeless eyes. They had no explanation to give. They were just puppets, simple ciphers designed to keep the doctor at bay until... Doctor! Charity's voice cut across the room like a razor. I think you should see this, now! He darted across to where she was standing at the window. What is it? He asked above the din. There! She said, pointing out the window into the night, pointing to where a thick, pulsating mist was now rolling across the Yorkshire moorland towards them. A figure silhouetted in the distance, its eyes shining an ancient, evil blue. The demon of Thornton Rising had risen from its tomb. Doctor and Charity fled swiftly down the tower, two steps at a time, abandoning the lifeless bodies of the monks behind them. The doctor now had 1,000 different ideas flooding through his head and was trying desperately to make them fit together. They had to be connected. The deaths, the darkness, the woman he'd met on the moors. But how? He burst through the doors to the abbey, back into the garden, sonicking them shut behind him. Those men, Charity gulped breathlessly. What happened to them? They were drained of blood, kept alive as playthings, the doctor explained. Some kind of macabre little game, I'd imagine. An act of revenge? That's the sort of thing this creature does, what she lives for. And she's out there right now. He paused, his eyes widening dramatically. You scared yet? A bit, Charity admitted. Brilliant, the doctor grinned. Always a good idea to be scared. Keeps you alert. Nothing worse than being all brash and fearless. Whew. Now then, you got a plan? How about we find this thing and kill it? The doctor mulled this over disapprovingly. No offence. But have you got any other plans? Charity shook her head. Not at the moment, no. Sorry. Oh, nor me. Never mind. I'm sure I can improvise on the way. He took her hand in his, dragging her off behind him. And off we go! As they ran back into Thornton Rising, the Doctor was surprised to see the village square empty. No trace of the mob that had crowded there just an hour or so before. He looked around, his eyes searching for someone, anyone that could help. But there was no one.
Only a couple of the watchmen, still patrolling the borders, their lanterns held aloft, and Godchild's horse trotting casually around the square, neglected and looking for company. Immediately the Doctor ran towards it, ruffling his hands through its mane, stroking its muzzle affectionately.
"Are you all alone?"
he asked, adopting an unusually saccharine talk to the animal's voice.
"Have the nasty men left you to fend for yourself? There, there, we're here now. We'll look after you, won't we, Charity?"
He noticed she was still standing a good few feet away from them, keeping her distance.
"Come on," he urged, waving her over. "Come and say hello to Henry."
"Henry?" Charity stretched out a hand, nervously patting the top of the horse's head before withdrawing it.
"Why, Henry?"
"Good name for a horse, Henry," he replied. Charity sighed.
"If you say so."
"Anyway, this is the plan," the Doctor said, turning back to Henry. "And I'm sorry. I really am very sorry. But I'm going to have to ask you to be big and brave and strong. Can you do that for me?"
He looked into the horse's eyes, offering reassurance. And for the briefest moment, it looked almost as though the horse nodded its agreement.
"Brilliant. One down, three to go."
"Three what?" Charity asked.
"Horses," he told her as if it was obvious, though he could tell from the expression on her face that she wasn't convinced. "I'll explain on the way," he promised. "Now then, can you ride?"
Charity hesitated. Well, this is the thing," she started. "Horses terrify me. I got thrown from one when I was a girl. Never ridden since. Sorry."
"No, that's fine," the Doctor reassured her. "Probably best you stay here anyway. Keep you safe, out of danger." He ran his hand back through his hair. "Now then, where do I get more horses from?"
"I'm sorry?" Charity asked, confused.
"Horses," the Doctor repeated. "Where can I get some?"
"Well, Nate's a blacksmith. He works in the stables down by Stowe Field. You could always ask him."
"Perfect," the Doctor grinned. "Now then, here's what we do. And by we, I mean you and I. Individually, not together. Got that?"
"I think so," Charity said.
"Good. In that case, most important thing first. Namely, you. I want you to go home and lock yourself in until this is all over. Understand? Make sure you're safe, secure, and don't answer your door to anyone. Not even me."
He hesitated momentarily.
"Actually, no. If it's me, answer it. Especially if you hear me banging. And I don't just mean ordinary banging, I mean loud enough to wake the neighbours banging. Does that make sense? So if you hear me banging on your door, possibly in hysterics, screaming out loud, I'd say almost certainly answer it. But only if it's me. Probably."
"And what are you going to do?" Charity asked.
"Oh," the Doctor beamed. "I'm going to bring the daylight back to Thornton Rising. Just you watch me."
And that's just what Charity did. She watched as the Doctor rode off towards the stables, leaving her behind to lock herself away, and for a second she even considered actually doing what he'd asked. Then she started thinking about what the Doctor had said to her before. Sometimes it was sensible to be scared. It stopped us from making mistakes, rushing in where angels fear to tread. But if that fear also stopped us from doing what we want, from leading our lives to their full potential, wouldn't that be a far bigger mistake to make? She looked back to where the Doctor had been standing just minutes before, then out towards the field. She spent her entire life hoping for something more to this world. And now that she'd found it, now she'd met the Doctor, she'd decided to give him up. And so easily. But why? Why had she done that? Because of some childhood fear she'd once had holding her back? Perhaps. But she was an adult now. She could make her own decisions. Fear itself was nothing to be afraid of. Time to put away those childish things, she thought. Without even realizing, she found herself already running through the village, following the Doctor's trail, trying to catch up with him, her legs struggling to sprint beneath her skirts. Perhaps she might be able to help him after all. She ran for what seemed like hours, but it could only have been minutes, her feet skidding unsteadily on the slick gravel paths. But when she finally reached Stowe Field, the thick, wet mud splattering up her skirt,
She could see it was already too late. Doctor! She called, the desperation in her voice echoing round the fields. Doctor, where are you? But he was already gone.
Oh, yeah, that doctor of yours was here,
Nate told Charity as she burst into the stables.
He just came rushing in, much like you, asking for horses and Lord knows what else. Not so much as a hello. Said he was off to fight this demon thing or something.
And did he say where he was going? Charity asked.
Not a clue, Nate said, shaking his head. He went off with Owen, Patrick and Wesley, though, I think. I offered to help, but he told me to head home. Said I should wait for you. Is that right?
But Charity wasn't listening to a single word he was saying.
Are you all right? He asked.
I'm fine, she smiled. Really, I'm fine. This was her chance. She didn't need a horse to help the doctor. She could still be with him at his side when he needed her. See you later, she promised, kissing Nate lightly on the cheek. Then she darted out of the stables, running towards the misty glow on the horizon. Love you, she shouted over her shoulder, turning her back on him, and Nate sighed as she vanished into the night.
Love you too, he muttered.
Owen Grantham, Patrick Higgins, and Wesley Millett had been following the doctor through the darkness for what seemed like forever. They'd followed him across the plains and meadows of the Dales, pursuing their elusive will-o'-the-wisp, never once daring to speak a single word to one another, their horses whinnying in protest through the thick autumnal mud. Then, as they reached the outer edges of the woods, the doctor had signalled them to slow as they approached, which they did, following his lead. Although none of the men would admit it, each of them felt strangely uneasy in his company. Somehow, the doctor's entire manner unnerved them, though not one of them knew why. Perhaps it was his misguided confidence, the fact he hadn't shown a hint of fear since arriving in their village, a village where everyone was terrified, and had good reason to be. Even now he was moving effortlessly through the woods like some kind of hunter, his ears pricked as though listening out for everything and anything around them. Then he'd forge ahead at speed without any warning, not a care in the world, almost threatening to lose his followers completely. At one point they were even considering heading back to the village without him, when suddenly they heard Henry splutter to a halt ahead of them, the doctor pulling tightly on his reins. As they grew closer, they found the doctor staring at a figure in the distance, a thin silhouette shrouded in the mist. They could barely make it out at first. Then, as they padded slowly closer through the undergrowth, they realized it was a person, standing there, alone in the woods. A woman. She had her back towards them, so they had no idea who she might be, though the doctor clearly had his own suspicions, and his horse too seemed to recognize her scent. One of the men was about to call out, to ask if she was all right, if she needed any help, when the doctor abruptly held a finger to his lips, ordering him not to. The men looked on silently as the doctor's horse padded closer to the creature, trying to coax some kind of reaction out of it. But still, she didn't move. Had they got it wrong, they wondered. Were their eyes playing tricks on them in the gloom? Suddenly, the woman spun round to face them, swivelling on her heels, her cold blue eyes shining brightly into theirs. She wasn't one of the women from the village, they knew that much. In fact, none of them had ever seen her before. But the doctor had. He recognised her almost immediately as she did him. They'd met each other briefly on the moors once before.
Good evening, Doctor, she purred. How nice to meet you again. And I see this time we have company.
But the doctor didn't respond.
Ignore her, he ordered, as the men approached. Just close your eyes and try not to listen to her.
That's right, the woman teased. Instruct your fodder to ignore me, Doctor. Like lambs to the slaughter. Tell them to drop their guard.
What does she mean by that? Patrick asked nervously. Why exactly did you bring us up here?
This is why I told you to ignore her, the doctor scowled. Now please just listen to me and do what we agreed.
Reluctantly, the men gave way to the doctor's demands, shifting slightly in their saddles. The woman watched as their horses trotted away from the doctor's, then started closing in around her, covering every side. Within seconds, she was trapped within a circle of horses. The doctor noticed her body stiffen visibly as they approached, struggling to retain its composure in front of them. He'd somehow guessed that she liked to appear cool, calm, and collected.
I suppose you think that's clever, she hissed as they surrounded her.
What does she mean?
Interrupted Owen.
What's clever?
The doctor sighed. That's still not really ignoring her now, is it?
And that's not really answering my question.
The woman smirked as she watched the doctor try to combat his frustration.
It's the horseshoes, he explained as quickly as he could. They're made of iron, and we just happen to be dealing with a creature that's extremely sensitive to it. Small doses. Lovely. She'll go right ahead and lap it up. But too much of a good thing, and well, who knows what might happen?
He glared at the woman, but she simply smiled back at him.
Who indeed? She grinned. Just remember what I said to you before, the doctor continued. The most important thing is to stay exactly where you are right now. Whatever she does, whatever she might say, she can't reach you so long as you stay on your horse. Horseshoes holding her back, you see? Clever, didn't you think?
Exceedingly, the woman agreed through gritted teeth. How do you know so much about all this then? Asked Wesley.
And what exactly is she anyway?
A being of purest darkness, the doctor explained. Probably brought some of it with her, come to think of it. Seen a few of her kind before.
Well, maybe not her kind exactly. Not quite sure where this one originates from, to be honest.
The woman coughed loudly from the confines of her circle.
I am the Barven Shee, she told them.
The doctor racked his brains.
Barven Shee? He repeated to himself. Barven Shee, Barven Shee.
Nope, never heard of you. The woman's expression faltered slightly.
Nor would you have, she said. My race has long since perished, destroyed in a war to end all wars, played out across the galaxies.
She cast an accusing look towards the doctor.
Yet you survived,
he observed, shrugging off her gaze.
I fled, she corrected him. The last of my kind. Banished to this pathetic little world for the rest of our days. We had no choice.
The doctor felt his thoughts slipping away from him again, and suddenly found himself back inside her mind, reliving those events for the very first time, trapped inside her memories. He looked around. He was on the flight deck of some kind of shuttlecraft, crude, compact, and cramped. Bodies were shifting, shouting, struggling to work with one another at the controls. And some of them were screaming, first of all at one another, then for their lives. The shuttle had been hit. The entire ship lurched violently to one side, flinging the Barven women hard across the flight deck. Lights now flashing, sirens wailing, fighting to be heard over the cries of its crew. All hell broke loose. The doctor watched as a series of sparks exploded across the controls, as flames licked up beneath the panels, spreading across the room. He could feel the heat of 100 fires against his face as the earth hurtled towards them on a viewscreen. Closer and closer, faster and faster. It all happened so quickly.
Get out of my mind!
The doctor barked as he finally managed to force their memories away from him. And with an effort, he found himself back in the woods with the men, the Barven Shee smirking cruelly up at him.
That was our planetfall, she said, an unexpected vulnerability seeping through her voice. That's what we endured before we even arrived on this world. Before it all went wrong.
And then what? The doctor demanded. The Barven Shee threw him a vicious glare, as though he'd intended to interrupt her grief.
Then our ship was devastated, he spat. Half its crew destroyed. Of the remaining casualties, only a handful of us survived. We attempted a repair, of course.
But? The doctor prompted.
But this would all have happened several centuries ago, by your reckoning, Doctor. At a time when the technology of this world was even more limited and primitive than it is now. There was no escape for us.
Wesley was confused again.
Hold on. What does she mean, centuries ago? How old is she?
The Barven Shee held up one of her slender white hands, silencing him.
Come now, she teased. That's hardly a suitable question for a lady.
Then how about this for a question, offered the doctor. What happened next? Because I'm pretty sure you didn't just sit around the dales all day taking in the view. Mind you, I could be wrong. It is a lovely view, after all.
The doctor watched as a thin smile flickered across her face. the fangs creeping from the corners of her mouth as she grinned. "We did what we needed to survive," she answered simply. "What every race needs. We fed Doctor." She seemed almost to relish his sudden expression of disgust, and the Doctor knew at once she was telling the truth. He'd already seen them, countless terrified faces flooding through his mind. All of them men. Harry Winter and Abraham Godchild amongst them. But he'd seen other things too. "That's all very well," the Doctor told her. "But something managed to overwhelm you, didn't it? Something went wrong. And I know it did. Because when you tried to get inside my mind, I managed to get inside yours, and I think I've worked it all out." "Just as I intended," she sneered. "As they say on this pathetic little world, keep your friends close and your enemies closer."
"Oh, don't give me that," the Doctor protested. "You had no idea who I was when you met me. You weren't to know I could get inside your head. Not a nice place, by the way. Could do with a spot of tidying up."
The Barvon She scowled angrily at him. "It was the Sisterhood, wasn't it?" he continued. "They realised what you were, what you were doing, and managed to find a way of defeating you. Am I right?" The Barvon She clapped her hands together mockingly.
"Those miserable wenches never understood what we were," she growled. "They vanquished us through chance and chance alone. They tracked us down across the moors and hunted us, as we would hunt their menfolk. Then they slaughtered my sisters in the name of their religion and left me all alone. The last of my kind, a fugitive."
"But they spared your life," the Doctor pointed out. "That's something, surely."
"They did no such thing," she spat angrily. "They buried me where I lay when I was sleeping, trapped me beneath the ground for centuries, all the time alive."
She paused as she calmed the anger in her voice, gritting her teeth.
"That was the biggest mistake they ever made. They should have killed me then, and they had the chance."
The Doctor sighed heavily. In some ways, he could even sympathize with her. He'd experienced it all before. The rage at having lost so much so quickly. He watched his own race die in battle. He'd even been the one to make it happen. And now he was alone again. One man against the universe. Even his friends all had to leave him in the end. "I know how you feel," he told her quietly.
"You probably already know that.
But I can help you if you let me. We can find you a new home, anywhere in the universe. Away from Earth. What do you reckon?"
"Or we could just kill her now," Patrick suggested. "No," said the Doctor firmly. "That's not how we do things. Not while I'm around."
"But there's only one of her," Patrick argued. "And this is my chance to live again," the Barvon She roared. "I was spared for a reason, to ensure my race survived. And now with your assistance, of course, Doctor, I might just achieve that."
She smiled uneasily at him. "You'll come with me then," he asked, "back to the TARDIS." But her laugh said it all.
"Come with you?"
she cackled through the darkness.
"Why would I do that? This world destroyed my sisters, my whole life. But now I have a chance to rebuild the Barvon Empire. A universe of darkness and death with me as its commander."
She turned to the other three.
"You simpletons will be the first to die," she told them calmly. "Sorry." "Now, just hold on a moment," the Doctor yelled. "You're talking as if this is all some kind of done deal. It isn't. How do you expect to repopulate your race if you insist on killing every man you come across, hmm? Do you seriously expect to take on an entire world single-handed?"
But the Barvon She didn't reply. Instead, the four men heard a twig snap behind them, and the Doctor had the most awful feeling that this would be the answer to his question. He turned, looking around the woods from his saddle, as the other three men finally opened their eyes. But they couldn't see anything, not yet. just the same thick white mist rolling through the trees, closing in around them. Footsteps advancing through the undergrowth towards them. Then, silhouettes started forming in the gloom. The doctor saw them first, their bodies outlined by their auras in the haze, just like the Bar Von Shi before them. There could only have been a handful of them, he thought. Well, maybe two handfuls.